Well, isn't this a little surprise?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. Happy Friday. I'm Steve Chiatakis. It's the Morning Open, a look at the broader economy as we're about 20 minutes into the trading day. Unemployment, unexpectedly better. AIG reports some better numbers. And for a little elbow grease, you too can make a home. And we ask, where's Wall Street? Up right now, the S&P and NASDAQ up nearly 1%, the Dow up about 0.8%. European markets higher right now, and Asian shares closed mixed today. The Labor Department reports unemployment in July actually notched down 0.1% to 9.4%. Job losses totaled 247,000, far less than expected. Sam Stovall is chief investment strategist at S&P Equity Research. He joins us live this morning from New York. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning, Steve.
Surprise to you?
Yes, a bit of a surprise. I think everyone pretty much thought that we could end up seeing a better than expected decline in the payrolls, but I'm not really sure that everyone expected to see the unemployment rate slip lower. I think more people thought that we would be inching our way toward that magic 10% level.
You think, Sam, this is enough to change the behavior of consumers and business owners? They've been really bearish this past year, right?
They certainly have been bearish. I think business owners have been more willing to cut jobs very quickly to try to get ahead of this recessionary curve. But now maybe they were thinking that they cut a little bit too quickly.
And do you think, because a lot of folks have been talking about, the recession's going to come to an end sometime in the fourth quarter, does this figure move that schedule up or forward at all?
Yes, it does. I think that the unemployment data, as well as some of other economic data out there, point to the possibility that we could be seeing the recession end by the third quarter rather than the fourth quarter of this year.
I mean, I want to make this clear that this isn't just like a fluke, you don't think? Maybe next month, you know, the numbers go higher?
Well, the reason why I think we saw the reduction in the unemployment rate is because we had a lower participation rate. By that I mean more people said, oh, forget it, I'm not going to even look for a job because things look so bad. So we could see a reversal of that next month as more people become encouraged by the employment data and say, well, gee, maybe I gave up too soon. Yeah. But let's remember that unemployment is something that typically tops out a good 9 months after the stock market bottoms and a good 6 months after the recession has ended.
All right, Sam Stovall, thanks for being with us this morning. We appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
You got it. The Senate voted last night to add another $2 billion to Cash for Clunkers. That's a government program that gives car buyers an incentive to trade out their gas guzzlers. Now, obviously, dealerships are anxious for the program to move forward. Car sales are up sharply because of the plan, but not every lot is going clunker crazy. Here's Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith.
Cash for Clunkers has sent hundreds of thousands of cars to the scrap heap. And while that's good for new car sales, it's not so good for used car dealers. Trent Snyder is the manager of Trent's Used Car Network in Princeton, Minnesota. He says Cash for Clunkers has created a shortage of used cars and pushed prices up.
It's driven car prices through the roof because there's less supply out there for them to sell. And there's still a dire need for that lower-priced car.
Snyder says many would-be used car buyers can't afford one now, so those sales are lost. But the shortage of inexpensive used cars will help some sellers get more for the junker they've got. Paul Taylor is chief economist at the National Automobile Dealers Association.
It does make used cars more valuable, and that's important to the customers that they have more trade-in equity on a new car or on an additional used car.
More than 250,000 people have cashed in their clunkers so far. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
Listening to the Morning Report for Friday, August 7th, 2009, at marketplace.org. Some promising numbers out of Germany this morning. Exports there jumped 7% in June, and industrial orders continue to rise. Reporter Christopher Worth has more.
Germany's economy runs on selling products to other countries. It typically runs a trade surplus, which is why this surge in exports is good news for German companies. They've been hit hard as consumers pinch pennies in the rest of the world. But does this mean Germany is headed for a V-shaped recovery? Stefan Schneider is an economist with Deutsche Bank.
Probably not a V-shaped. I mean, if you take the picture literally, it would mean that the rebound will be as strong as the slump. And I think that's exaggerated. So it would be an odd V in a way, meaning that the right-hand side of the V is probably much less steep than the left-hand side.
But Schneider says if you look closely at that odd-shaped V, it does look like the free fall in the German economy has finally bottomed out. It's also good news for German policymakers who've defended the country's dependence on exports against pressure to become a more consumer-driven economy like the United States. Schneider says that model hasn't been shown to work very well either. I'm Christopher Wirth for Marketplace.
Today we learned American International Group posted its first profit in 7 quarters. The troubled insurer made $1.8 billion in the second quarter. Now, AIG received tens of billions of dollars in federal bailout money because it was hemorrhaging to the brink of oblivion. The government, read you and I, own 80% of the company. Reporter Mitchell Hartman has more on the company's crawl out of the bailout hole.
First, a little history. AIG got into risky securities backed by shaky mortgages. It was losing billions on these so-called toxic assets until the government bailed it out last fall. Now, $182 billion in taxpayer money later, AIG appears to be doing fine. Its stock was up as much as 65% earlier this week. Jeffrey Kleintop is chief market strategist at LPL Financial in Boston. He thinks what's happening in part is that AIG's troubled assets are starting to increase in value just a bit as financial markets recover.
Markets have gone from pricing in a Great Depression to merely a typical recession to now a recovery.
But Kleintop says it's not like these assets have gone through a complete detox and are now high-quality investments.
Delinquencies continue to rise, defaults continue to rise, there are foreclosures taking place. So on a lot of those mortgage-backed assets, the fundamentals haven't gotten a whole lot better.
Still, he says, as investor confidence returns, companies like AIG will find a market for their troubled assets, and that'll help their bottom lines. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Being without work can raise a whole host of financial and emotional problems. It's also raising big and small questions of etiquette. From Chicago Public Radio, Adrian Hill reports.
It's not something that most etiquette books cover in great detail, how to handle being out of work in the middle of a recession. And Mary Gustafson has a lot of questions. She was laid off from her job as an editor of a trade magazine in January. We meet up at a cafe in Chicago. She's found herself wondering how to be in touch or out of touch with old colleagues.
My friend and I decide there's a cooling off period before you can talk to your old coworkers again without it being too awkward.
She's pondered how to handle expensive dinner invitations and
what to do when you find out you've been either defriended on Facebook or de-LinkedIn.
And solving this social quandary.
The hardest one is figuring out how much you can whine to somebody without being too whiny. Like, you can feel sorry for yourself for a while and you can let people buy you drinks for a while, but how long is it okay for you to complain?
I think you need to factor in a few days of Doritos on the couch, crying, you know, angry, and then you really do need to set that aside.
Amy Dickinson is the advice columnist at the Chicago Tribune.
It's like, you know, when you're dating. You don't want to go on a date with a guy who's, like, complaining about his ex. So you have to leave it, and I think you have to leave it as quickly as you can.
She says the people who do best are the ones who just get on with life, who don't hole up and withdraw. Job seeker Gustafson says it can be tough to feel confident meeting someone new.
Chit-chatting at wedding showers or any other public event, it's kind of awkward when they ask what you do and you have to say you're unemployed.
Dickinson, the advice expert, suggests it's time we all rethink the ways we interact.
Small talk isn't so small anymore.
Her recommendations for new topics, maybe celebrity gossip, or simple, perhaps more meaningful questions like, how are you? For Marketplace, I'm Adrienne Hill in Chicago.
You know, today a brewing trade spat between the United States and China falls on the official agenda in Washington. The U.S. Trade Representative is holding a hearing on tires and whether China exports too many of them to the United States. From Shanghai, here's Marketplace's Scott Tong.
On one side of this dispute is the United Steelworkers. They make the metal wiring that goes in tires. The union says a recent flood of made-in-China imports has disrupted the U.S. tire market and cost 5,000 American factory jobs. The steelworkers want quotas on Chinese tires, plus a 55% tariff. To China, that would equal protectionism. Shi Mingqi is with the Shanghai Academy for Social Sciences.
This could become a symbolic case and encourage more American companies and trade unions to introduce more this kind of case against China's exports.
Should the White House play hardball, he expects China to retaliate against U.S. exports, a.k.a. trade war. This is a tough call, since China is America's largest foreign creditor. After today's hearing, the U.S. Trade Representative will recommend to the president whether to impose the tariffs. And then the president makes the final decision, probably next month. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
In the state of Maryland, you can live in a house for free. No rent, no mortgage, you don't even have to swing for property taxes. You know what you do have to swing for? A hammer. The state's historic home curator program looks for hard work in lieu of a house note, as Kathy Duchamp reports.
Historic is the key word here. You do get a house for life, but you have to renovate it at your own expense. That could be a lot, depending on the condition of the property.
This floor we could save. This one, I mean, we were just sanding and sanding, and it was coming up in clumps in our hands.
That's Bridget Hiskey. She's reliving the renovation of the 1880s farmhouse that had become a run-down party pad. Now it's the home where the Hiskeys are raising two kids.
It was all bad. My husband called it our own private crack house because it was horrifying. But we loved it, you know. We just said, okay, yeah, we can do this. We were young and had a lot of energy, I guess.
The Hiskeys were in their late 20s when they set out to restore this house. It's set in a pasture surrounded by woodlands in a state park outside Baltimore, Maryland. 16 years and $200,000 later.
I really feel like we resurrected something. We brought something back.
There are a handful of historic home curator programs nationwide, most on the East Coast. The goal, to preserve structures on state land at no cost to taxpayers. Bruce Alexander runs Maryland's program. He's a landlord over 43 properties. Alexander says don't apply if your main interest is to live rent-free.
Because first and foremost, the curatorship program is a historic preservation program. It is not a free house program. So when we have proposals, we really gauge people on the basis of their interest and ability in historic preservation.
As part of the application, would-be curators have to submit detailed restoration plans that include budgets. Banks generally don't make construction loans for homes that can't be sold, which might explain the dip in interest Alexander's seen in the program lately.
Perhaps the thought to invest this money in a property that they don't necessarily own at this time isn't maybe something that people are willing to do just yet.
So why did the Hiskeys do it?
We have other investments. I'm not saying they're doing great in this market, but, you know, like everybody else, it's swinging. And here, this is just a dream.
A house in the country that if the Hiskeys fix and maintain, they can stay in forever. In Woodstock, Maryland, I'm Kathy Duchamp for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being with us. Have a great weekend.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.